Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, David.
So lovely to see you here this morning. Will you please pray with me? Oh, Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. Some of these dear God from children have been circulated around a bit, but there's some that are so cute. And this one I find especially endearing. Dear God, I bet it's very hard for you to love everybody in all the whole world. There are only four people in our family, and I can never do it. Dear God, if we come back as something, please don't let it be Jennifer Horton, because I hate her. And the reason for reading it today, dear God, please put another holiday between Christmas and Easter, because there's nothing good there now. That comes from Jenny. It's interesting to think, and perhaps you've thought of it before and perhaps not, but that the time of the crucifixion, as it's put into the Bible, is the time of Passover. And so there's very definitely, symbolically, a link between the Passover and over the experiences that Jesus goes through at that time. And I'd like to read from here the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary. And this comes from the definition of Passover, and it's from Hebrew. And it means passing over, i.e. a stream or obstruction, overcoming, sparing, protecting, delivering. The metaphysical definition. The Passover was an annual festival of the Israelites, and is still kept by the Jews in commemoration of their escape from the Egyptians. It was used by Jesus to represent the freeing of the spiritual man from the dominion of sense. It is a part of the regenerative process that goes on in the body under the inspiration of the Christ mind. It is the passing over or out of one state of consciousness into another. Isn't that an interesting way of thinking of it? It's a passing over or a passing through one state of consciousness to another. In order to get the esoteric interpretation of the Passover, it is necessary to analyze the descent of spirit into the subjective consciousness and follow it step by step in its many manifestations. Physically speaking, Egypt represents the part of the body below the diaphragm. The various plagues brought upon the Egyptians by the Lord through Moses are symbolic representations of the appearances that ensue in this part of the organism when the presiding intelligence, or the Pharaoh, opposes the influx of higher life. So there seems to be something beeping in the all of our electronics here. So to relate that to the spine and the chakras, then, from the third chakra, or about the belly button area down below, is the state of Egypt at the base of the spine. And it represents their material authority, material power in this stage of the story. And the Pharaoh represents the adherence to his own kingdom, being the ruler, as the eagle would be, and is refusing or rejecting the higher vibrations and opposes it. And as a result of that, these various plagues come upon the man. A parallel to the bloody waters, frogs, lice, flies, murrain, boils, hail, locusts, darkness and death of the firstborn may be found in the various diseases of the bowels, the kidneys, and other organs of the body, as named by doctors. A very large portion of these ills are the result of human resistance to spiritual consciousness, which is the working widely in humanity. So we see that many of the diseases that we suffer from have to do with the various organs in the stomach region. And these are things that become fouled, they become plagued, and we have a lot of difficulties because our internal organs are not acting up to par. So it's these things that in the body represent the rejection of the higher life force. We oftentimes don't think of illnesses that we may have to encounter that come about because we are really rejecting God. We are rejecting the higher divine life force. And so we get into this oppositional force with it, with the body. It goes back and forth. We talked about Solomon and how he was attuning himself to this higher consciousness. And at some point, he fell off the path. He began to reject it. He became passionately involved with a woman, and it was against the inner workings. And these passions come up, but opposition comes in lots of different forms. It can be a stubbornness of the mind. It can be a fear that we entertain. It can be a lack of attunement to divine consciousness. When we are really doing our sadhana, we're doing our spiritual practice, we're alive. Now, it doesn't mean that life is always easy. We run into obstacles, we run into problems. But there's a vast difference between the aspirant who is really spiritually alive, attuned, working their path, versus the one who feigns to be on the path, who is giving it some lip service and even feels inside themselves that they're doing all right. But they're not really spiritually alive. They're not really bending their effort towards achieving spiritual perfection. This thing that we call Christ consciousness and cosmic consciousness is the pearl of great price, as Mother oftentimes said. And unless we're really willing to get in and do the work, we're not going to make the progress that we should. We must be willing to spend the time diving deep into meditation and soaring high into the spiritual spheres, attuning ourselves moment by moment throughout the day to the spiritual consciousness, that it's not just something that we do at the beginning of the day or the end of the day or once a week at Sunday service or other kinds of tipping your hat towards it. It is an all-the-time kind of thing because you are constantly creating. Your mind is always projecting out vibration. And also, it is going into the receptive subconscious mind. And whatever you think, whatever you say, whatever you do, casts a very definite imprint upon the subconscious mind. It also goes out as a vibration. And it affects all those who are around you. It goes out to this world. You cannot help but be in a constant state of creation. It is part of your nature. It is part of your God nature. And even those who would think that, well, perhaps it's better that I just end my life. It's so miserable and I'm in so much pain and I don't see it getting any better. And they were successful, so to speak, in taking their own life. They, too, are creating through that. And there's a vibration that goes out to this world that's inescapable, as well as a subconscious pattern that goes in and leaves an imprint upon the mind. These things are not easy to overcome. And when we really put our feet upon the spiritual path, those are the kinds of things that we encounter. And unless and until we are really ready to dig our heels in and to really go for this thing, to really come to terms with our own consciousness that, yes, there are things that are oppositional within us, but we work with them, we fight through them, we get through them, and as a result, we overcome. There are all those people who are looking for the easy way. And there are those who will come and they will take initiation because they think that there's some magic panacea. Now, it is a tremendous thing, this initiation. And we are tremendously privileged when we receive it. But it does not mean that the spiritual life or the spiritual fight is over. Just the opposite. Everything inside of us begins to rise up in opposition from this lower forces, from this navel chakra down. And the Pharaoh comes into its own, and he likes the power that he has and the authority he has in this world. And he's not likely to be willing to give it up. I remember so many times in my own life having to encounter so many of these things. I remember once when I was living at Peter and Laura's after I had made this change of life and entered into this new life. And there were times when God would take me up through the spine and into the higher regions of the brain. And I never knew when this might happen, and it happened often throughout the day. And one day I was walking up the hill towards the house. I'd been taken a walk down to the water. And so I was walking back up, and suddenly this tremendous life force lifted me up, and I didn't feel like I had 1 ounce of energy for this body, that I couldn't take another step. And I remember thinking to myself, well, God, if you take me right now and just drop this body right where it is on the sidewalk, so be it. Every single part of my life belongs to you. And I could not move one leg in front of another. I could not have a thought without your power, without your intelligence. And there was an inward surrender that happened in that moment that was a significant thing in my life. I let go on some level of something that I had been holding on to, some part of me that felt that I was in control, that I felt I had the power to do anything. And I realized on a deeper level in that moment that I had no power at all if it were not given to me from above. And this is a tremendous thing. These things are deeply rooted in our consciousness. They're not always easy to dig out. But the good news is we really don't have to go out digging after them. Just putting ourselves on the spiritual path will bring these things up from the subconscious mind. Now they begin to reveal themselves one after another, or perhaps in whole groups and families of them all at once. And they present themselves to you, and we call them temptations. But really, it's not some sadistic God who is tempting you with this thing and that to see whether you really are sincere or not. It's just simply the law of cause and effect. And you have sown these ideas and these feelings and these thoughts in your own subconscious mind. And now they come streaming out. They have to, in order to be purified. So this whole thing is about purification. So we run into this Pharaoh that exists right inside of us. And all of these different ailments are things that get represented by illnesses and obstructions and difficulties that we find within the body itself. A concept, getting back to our reading, a concept of truth in the head will eventually find its way through the whole body. And when its variations penetrate into the centers established in materiality, great resistance and pain sometimes follow. That sets up a chronic irritation and gives rise to a local condition to which the physician gives a name. Did the patient only know that it was spirit at work and fearlessly affirm the presence and power of the divine life, the opposition of the physical would pass away and a new and more enduring life flow would follow. This is a very important paragraph here. It's so easy in our mind to adhere to the illness that comes to us as if it is the be-all, end-all. It's the all-powerful thing in our mind when it comes on us. And particularly when we have a doctor diagnose a particular condition of the body, you can sense in yourself how strictly your mind adheres to that, how quickly it absorbs this kind of information and gives it all-powerful kinds of sustenance. When you are diagnosed with something, and particularly when you are on the spiritual path, you take everything that happens to you as part of your spiritual being. And that when you have this higher consciousness come in, it begins this life of purification inside of you. And therefore it stirs things up. If you've ever been on a fast or if you've ever been on a cleansing diet, you will know that as you enter into this, it stirs up the toxins that in the past have been held in the fat cells and different organs in the body. And it can make you feel pretty ill for a while. You can feel like you've got the flu. And you have all kinds of drainage and you have all kinds of difficulties going on. And you would believe that you are sick. But the truth is, you're not sick, you're getting well. You're expelling those poisons that have come into your system. Now, there are various ways to try to alleviate this, but to some degree, this will always be true. And even slight changes in the diet that begins to clean it up can have some pretty powerful effects. You can ask anybody who's tried to get off of coffee who's been drinking quite a bit, and the severe headaches that come to them. But if you can endure this, and let it pass through you, then you come into a better state of health. And what before had seemed like an illness, you actually now can see was helping you to get better and to clean out your body. In the same way, when the spiritual consciousness comes into you, you feel this stirring up. It stirs up things physically, emotionally, energetically, intellectually. It stirs you up on every single level. And if you can, in that moment, not give the power to what you're experiencing in terms of the negative, of what's being stirred up, but you know that the pure life force that's flowing through you is doing the stirring up, and you affirm with tremendous concentration that this is God's purity, God's power, God's intelligence that's working through you, then you let go of whatever it is that's being stirred up, and you let go of the toxins and the physical, you let go of the emotional toxins, you let go of the blocked energies in your body and your all around you, you let go of false ideas and false ideation, you let them pass through. And I've oftentimes described for many of you how you can visualize or feel, because some people are stronger in feeling than they are in visualizing, you can see and feel this flame in front of you, about 14 to 16 inches in front of you. And you feel that these toxins, you feel that these poisons that are coming from you, either in the physical, the emotional, or the mental, and that they're all flowing into this flame. And you let them go, and you see the flame take them and purify them. And this is a powerful method for allowing these toxins to flow through you. What happens so often when we feel that we are in an illness or a disease state, we contract, we hold on to it. It's the last thing we want to do, but it seems to be a kind of automatic thing that we do. So instead, you open yourself, you allow all of these toxic materials to flow out from you and into this flame. And you see this flame of God, this flame of truth, take it away, burn it away, completely purify you of it. And now it is gone from you. And you never have to deal with it again. Now this may take time to do. Purifying processes oftentimes do. But this is what we're speaking of in terms of really attuning yourself to the whole and complete truth. So you want to fearlessly affirm presence and power of the divine life. The opposition of the physical would pass away and a new and more enduring life flow would follow. There's a physical basis of life through which the natural world manifests. Physical generation is its law, and its seed is the material cell. In Exodus, the natural world is called Egypt. Jesus spoke of this as this world. Then there is the true world, whose foundation is spirit. This is the heaven of Jesus, and the house not made with hands, eternal, in the heavens, referred to by Paul. These are both in evidence in man's soul and body, and in regeneration there is a breaking up and passing away of the physical basis and an ushering in of the spiritual world. The firstborn of the Egyptians is the highest concept of life, perpetuation, that the physical man possesses. When the divine world or angel of the Lord passes through consciousness, a transformation takes place in this life thought. If the consciousness is established in materiality, it has no expectation or thought of spiritual life. The germ is destroyed by the high vibration and passes through the kidneys or bowels, and a general physical weakness follows. Isn't this interesting that we have these angels or higher thoughts coming from divine realms, and they come to us? And that if we reject it in this way, or we have no receptivity to it, then we suffer as a result, and we even suffer within the body. We can go through a physical weakness. And this is true also for people who have really put themselves on the spiritual path, and they find that lust comes up. This also comes down from these lower natures. And it really comes up and hits you very hard at this time. And because it's being stimulated by the divine life force that's coming in, the higher consciousness, if it's responded to in a physical way at that time, then that there's a loss that happens of that higher spiritual thought form in that moment. But if it's retained and lifted up through the spine, then you can really make some progress on the spiritual path. You hold that spiritual power. It doesn't just go out onto the ground, as it says in the Bible, but it's lifted up through the spine. Now, this is something to be taken with a great deal of wisdom and intelligence. We are all born into this world with a natural lust, you might say. There's a desire to sire new beings, new people, bring them into. This is a natural thing in the world. And in no way should this natural sex force be thought of as being dirty or filthy or something against God's nature. God created it. And He created us with this kind of desire nature. However, when you are seeking to go into the highest realms of consciousness, you use this fluid, this energy that's within the body, this creative energy, as a means for lifting it up through the spine. This is not repression. This is transmutation. There's a vast difference between the two. And so this age-old adage that Adam and Eve were the fall of man and that the sexual organs were the reason for this and all of that. And therefore, man is polluted. He is a sinner from his very birth. It's just simply not true. It's just simply not true. But it does describe a metaphysical condition that we come into, that when we get more adherence to this body consciousness and we become relegated to the lower consciousness within the spine, then we have a problem. And the problem must be solved. And we find that, as I was saying earlier, these subconscious patterns that form in the mind, the subconscious mind, now take over, and they're in the driver's seat. And so what we see today in the material world around us is that sex runs many, many things in advertising, in trying to sell things. Sex is used all over the place. This medium of the internet suddenly becomes a way for people who are sexually frustrated or wanting to find some outlet for their sexual nature to find various means for that. And this becomes, you might say, that the tail is wagging the dog now. The body is driving the show. The sexual nature is taken over. And there's some people who couldn't imagine going many moments through the day without being driven by their sexual nature and sexual thoughts. Now, this becomes the dominant thought form within the consciousness. So to transmute this sexual force in order to make real spiritual energy progress. And again, when spiritual consciousness comes in, it stirs all of this up. It seems to many people, and myself as included, that when I started this spiritual path, I had more of the thoughts that I didn't want to have. I had more of the sexual kind of drive. I had more of those kinds of difficulties than ever. And the reason is because when this powerful spiritual force comes in, it stirs these things up through the subconscious mind and through the old thought patterns, all in an effort to purify us. It's not there to torture us. And once we understand that, and once we can affirm that this is the divine consciousness and divine life that is at work here, it goes against many times what we think. Because we think that in the privacy of our own minds, that if we're having these sexual thoughts or these material thoughts being all stirred up, we must be the worst person in the entire world, certainly the worst aspirant in the world. Somebody could be no lower than me. And it's because we don't understand this principle that's being spoken of here. In order to come into the purity and the wholeness and the beauty of God consciousness, we have to pass through these various plagues. We have to pass through these various temptations and allow them to run their course until we have qualified ourselves to really be lifted up and to live in that eternal kingdom that is ours and was from the moment that we were born. This is the death of the firstborn of the Egyptians. If the mind is set on higher things, on understanding that the enduring life is spiritual, both within and without, the blood on the doorposts, then the germ is saved from its destruction. It is retained and the organism goes through a regeneration process, is multiplied, and eventually strengthens the whole man. So now this germ of Christ consciousness, the Christ seed, as Mother spoke about it, is gaining power because this spiritual force is being held within. We see it within church service oftentimes, that people will come and they will meditate deeply, they will receive the highest truth, and then just as soon as it's over, the voices gradually get louder and louder and the laughter is there. And in one way, this is a totally natural thing. But when you think about us trying to retain the spiritual power in life that has been given out through this time, it comes through the guru or the teacher, and it comes into the being. And there's ways that we can dispel that truth. We can dispel that power and that energy by being thoughtless and careless about it. Suddenly, we feel all giddy inside, or we feel uplifted, and it's all coming out, you see. None of it is being retained. And we lose some of the precious, precious gift that has been given to us during this time. So it's important. One devotee described how he would have to go to work after church service, but he didn't want to lose it all. So he would go and immediately get into his car after the hug from mother, and then he would go to the gallery where he worked, and he would just quietly try to go about doing some duties there, just doing some vacuuming and arranging some things. And as long as he could, he wouldn't interact with people, and he would just hold the spiritual energy inside of him, and he would just glow from it. And the biggest difficulty was that he looked like he was having such a good time, and so many people recognized this light, they wanted to come up and they wanted to talk to him. They wanted to engage with him. And you'll find that that's true, that as you enter into this spiritual life and you get spiritually charged, other people will find you more attractive than ever. And sometimes that can be a difficulty because it will they'll want to draw this light from you and get a cheap contact high, you might say. And you pay the price because now your mind and your conversation is drawn outwardly. And you lose the sense of God consciousness. You lose some of that upliftment. You lose some of that power. And so you learn how to retain it within yourself. And eventually, as you practice, you learn how you even enter into this world. You carry on conversations. You do things. And you don't lose one ounce of it. You're holding it within you. There's the wonderful story of the young boy who went to the king. And he made a judgment to the king because he is told that he is a saint. And he thought, no way can he live on this throne with all these attendants going back and forth. And can he be a real sage, a real saint? He must be a charlatan. So he started to walk out. But the king gave him a challenge. He said, fill this bowl up to the brim with oil. And now carry it throughout the palace without spilling one drop. So very carefully, he went through every room of the palace, totally focused on that bowl, totally focused on not spilling one drop of that oil. Finally, after a long time, he came back. And he felt quite pleased with himself because he hadn't spilled any oil. And the king asked him, and he said, now describe to me everything that you saw in every room you passed through. The boy was astounded. He said, sir, how could I? I was so focused on this bowl and the oil. I didn't notice anything about any of the rooms. He said, do it again. And this time, don't spill any oil and notice everything in every room. And so the boy painstakingly went throughout the palace again. And this time, as he was walking and holding the bowl, he is also allowing his eyes to take in all the different things in every room. And when he returned to the king, he could describe them all to him in detail. This is the kind of challenge that we have in retaining and holding God consciousness while operating in the world. There's a part of your mind that's always indwelling. It's thinking of God. It's feeling God's presence within you. It's not spilling a drop of it. And yet you're able to carry on conversations. You're able to do things in this world. All the while you're completely in God consciousness. This is quite something. But I can tell you, it is possible to do. And this is what we are striving to be able to attain. Back to our reading. We may mentally have made our truest statements and seemingly complied with all the law. Yet Pharaoh does not let our people go. There is no realization of freedom in the body consciousness. Another step is necessary, which is typified in the feast of the Passover. And so many people talk to me about this. I seem to be following all the rules. I seem to be meditating. I'm doing all of these things, and yet I'm not getting the bliss of God yet. In every change of consciousness on the physical plane, there is a breaking down of cells and a building up of other cells to take their place. Mentally, this is denial and affirmation. And this process in the body is the result of these two movements in the mind. We let go the animal life and take hold of the spiritual life by giving up consciously to this passing over process, this passing through, moving from one state of consciousness to another, which takes place when the old cells are replaced by the new. The lamb that is killed and eaten in the night represents this giving up of the animal life in obscurity of the carnal life. The command is that the lamb shall be without spot or blemish, and be wholly eaten after being roasted with fire. This refers to the complete surrender of the human life after it has been purified by the fires of regeneration. Fire represents the positive, affirmative state of mind as opposed to the negative or watery state. The children of Israel were commanded not to let the lamb be boiled, which is the old English present tense of seeth or sodden. We are not to allow the life in our organism to simmer and stew with worries and negative words of carnality. We must set it afire with strong words of truth. And isn't this the truth? What Jesus said was that don't be lukewarm. Be cold, be hot, but be one or the other. Don't be lukewarm. It gets you nowhere. This is to show us that there must be a physical sacrifice as well as mental, and that all the congregation of Israel shall join in. That is, the whole consciousness of spiritual desire shall acquiesce. Many metaphysicians think that it is not necessary to change the habits of the sense man, that one has only to keep his thoughts right and the flesh will thereby be wholly regulated. But the scripture teaches that there must be conscious physical changes before the complete demonstration in the mind and body is manifest. Thoughts work themselves out in things, and we get the full result of this work only when we follow consciously every step of the way and help them along. So watch your thoughts as they consecutively work out their... So watch your thoughts as they consecutively work their way through your organism. And if you find that some pure thought of spiritual life is striving to free the life in the appetites and passions of your physical Egypt, help it by consciously elevating that life to open the door of your mind. This is typified by putting the blood of the lamb on the two side posts and the lintel on the house door of the house. Do not be afraid to expose your inner life to the sight of the Lord, for only in perfect candor and childlike innocence can man come under the protection of the divine law. So this is a tremendous thing that's being spoken of here. This regeneration includes the body. And this was perhaps one of my greatest kind of surprises that happened to me, is how visceral and how physical this spiritual journey is, how it moves the body. I would sit at Bonnie's and for many times when Mother would be given talks, I would sit in the back in the darkened area, and I would let my spine rotate from the whole torso, from the waist up, and it would go in this direction and that direction. And somebody once asked me about it. They said, oh, you must be chanting and you're swaying to the chant. But this isn't how it was. This was the Kundalini force, and this is the other part of the fire nature. It's this tremendous fiery nature that comes up through the spine. And as I rotated first to the left and then to the right and wide swinging rotations around and around, and then my attention was transferred to the inner eye, and I looked down the spine, and there I saw from the top the head of a cobra moving in perfect rhythm with my spine as it moved in one direction and then to another. And this is a tremendous experience. And the reason that your body gets involved is because it's changing your cellular and your atomic structure itself, as well as a purification of all your organs and everything else that is in your body. This is a tremendous thing. And the thing is, you don't have to know how to make this happen. Divine consciousness inside of you knows it already. And it takes you on this journey when you surrender yourself to it, when you really let yourself go. My one regret in my life is that I wasn't born with a greater purity of mind so that I didn't make the mistakes that I did on the way up. I would have much preferred to be able to be aware of God consciousness and never, ever avoid it or try to go against it in any way. But I have to tell you the truth, and this wasn't the way for me. I made many mistakes on the way up. There were fears, there was resistance, there were desire natures that came up that worked in opposition against this. And I could go around feeling bad about that all day, but I know that this is absolutely necessary in order to attain to the complete and total divine consciousness. You can only begin with where you are at. You can wish that you were born a better person. You could wish that you were born more intelligent, more wise, more God conscious. But the fact is, you are a product of everything that you have ever done, everything that you have ever said, everything that you have ever thought as you've journeyed out from your conscious oneness with God into this individuality of human consciousness. And now you must pay the price. We must all pay the price. There's no getting around it. Jesus said that every farthing must be paid. You have to do it. But you don't have to do it alone. God and Guru are here for that purpose. And spiritual consciousness is coming into you and lifting you up, even now as you're listening to me. And if you open yourself, when you open yourself, now you open yourself and feel that powerful flow of divine consciousness moving through your spine and your brain, moving throughout your body. You give yourself over to it fully. And you allow yourself to be that spotless lamb to be sacrificed. It's a ridiculous notion in a way that you can kill an animal and therefore mitigate the sins that you've done. Where did this idea ever get started? It's because these things were talked about in metaphorical ways and then they took on a literal interpretation. But it makes no sense in that way. We have to pay the price. No one else can pay the price for us. Except the fact that there are those who come into this life to help others, and they can help them pay the price. Because they have attained that higher state of consciousness, and therefore it does not bring them down in order to suffer, in order to pay the price. And Jesus came into this world to help the entire world. You can imagine what a price he paid in order to be able to do this. And so in conclusion with our reading, so long as there is a hidden secret use of God's life in our habits and ways that we are not willing that that all should know, just so long will the bondage of Egypt's Pharaoh hold us in its clutches. So you have right to free will. You have the right to your privacy. You have the right to your own life. But as long as you are willing to hold on to any of it and say, this is me, this is mine, you are going to limit what God is able to do through you, through divine consciousness. The whole man must be pure, and his inner life must be made so open and free that he will not be afraid to blazon it upon the very doors of his house where all who pass may read. And so this divine life shines through you. Now you don't have to go knocking on doors, nor is it preferable that you do so, to announce yourself. And you don't have to stand on street corners with a Bible and shout God's name. But also, not to be ashamed, not to be afraid. Let your light shine freely. Let it shine openly. Be childlike in your nature. Don't withhold that light. Jesus says you don't light a lamp and then hide it under a bushel. You put it up on a hill. You put it up on a table. You put it up somewhere where it can Allow its light to be of some use. And so let your light be of use. When you go about your day, and if you go into your work day or into dealing with your family or going into a store, let your light shine. It's a wonderful exercise. When you go into a room, when you go into a place, any place at all, and just let your light shine. Feel it shining out from you, from your heart center, from your soul. Let God's light shine. Let it bless where you are at. I can tell you that it will change the vibration. It will change the atoms itself of a particular space. If you have an area, and we all should have an area where we meditate, a blanket that we meditate upon, a chair, or a particular space in a room, or an entire room itself may be dedicated as a puja room. And that room becomes our place where we hold sacred communion in the deepest of ways with God. And it is also witness to the storms that happen during our spiritual sadhana. But it builds up a spiritual power. And the very things that you use, your mantra beads, if you use those, or your meditation blanket, anything at all takes on a spiritual vibration. Because what it becomes penetrated and permeated with the vibration that is emanating from you, and you can change your home into a temple. Now, you still live there, and you still do all the things that you would do in a home, but because you have filled it with your spirit, it has become a temple in reality. And people will come into your home, and they just say, I don't know what it is, but I just feel a great sense of peace when I come in here. And it's because you have transmuted and divinized the place where you have lived, and it lives as a lasting gift to whoever comes and follows afterwards. So the whole man must be pure, and his inner life must be made so open and free that he will not be afraid to blazon it upon the very doors of his house where all who pass may read. Then the Lord will execute his judgment, and those who have purified the life of the lamb or the body will escape the messenger or the thought of death. And they will have achieved something even more, because death comes in many ways, and there is a spiritual death. You can die spiritually. You can live in the body but be spiritually dead. You are the walking dead. And when this death comes over you, it's not just death of the body, although if your organs become diseased, it can result in the death of the body. But the reality is that it becomes death. Your spiritual death passes you by, and you retain that spiritual life within you. Now, it's upon this foundation that Jesus was building his new covenant, his new commandments, the new life in Christ. This takes you and puts you firmly on the spiritual path, this original Passover. But what we are commemorating at this juncture of the year is something that goes beyond that, but it has to be built upon something. So Jesus is taking this symbolically, and he's saying, this is the next step that I'm telling you about. This takes you into the solid footsteps of sadhana for this Passover, this passing through. But what you pass through into, the Christ consciousness, the divine consciousness, this is the next stage. And this is where the new covenant and the new commandment comes into. So as we come into this week and we mark Good Friday, and on Good Friday night, from about 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, we're going to have a silent meditation. And if you would like to join us, from a distance. We won't make a recording of that one because that would be just a lot of quiet, which may carry a vibration with it, but we'll forego that. You can attune yourself through the internet, through the spiritual connection that we all have. So whether you're here in this Dharmashala in this home or not, or whether you attune yourself from a distance, please do that. Because these are times of great power. And these transitions, this equinox time, is a time when there is an opening. And through that opening, spiritual vibrations pass more easily through. Now, there may be a stirring up. It oftentimes happens. That's all right. Don't think on that. Think of the original instigator of that stirring up, the spiritual vibration. And let it all pass through you and into the flame. And you will be purified through that process. Then on Saturday evening, we're going to watch Zeffirelli's masterpiece of Jesus of Nazareth and watch some of these dramatizations of the stages that Jesus goes through. And the Garden of Gethsemane and then the crucifixion. Now, these can be thought of as grisly things in one sense, and they are. But they don't forget, they represent a deeper symbolic meaning. And they are universal, these teachings are. So become receptive. Become receptive. And feel yourself flowing with divine consciousness. Whatever you sense, a tingling vibration within the spine, within the body, a sense of flow, a sense of vibrant presence, a peace, a love in your heart. Let it all flow. Let it all flow and radiate out to this world. And you will be taken on the most tremendous journey that any human being can be taken through. And you will journey from that human to the divine. And you will know from your own experience that everything that I teach you is the truth. That it is the truth. Join me in closing prayer, please.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet
and surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.